You're in the zone.
Defense wins championships, run the ball, establish the run, and ground and pound, baby. Wear down defenses.
With Jason Anderson.
Box scores matter. Hashtag box scores matter. Kirk Cousins is actually good. Put your hand in the dirt.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I've got some mixed emotions right now. Because when I reached out to our friend Ryan Tracy to see if he'd be interested in joining us to talk about some Chiefs free agency stuff, Juwan Taylor and all of that, I was really excited. I thought we'd have a lot of fun, look at what the Chiefs had already done, what they might do in the future, do some projection, maybe even take a peek ahead of the draft. But then something happened last night, and frankly, I mean, Beards, it looks like he's on the line. You have gotten a hold of Ryan, right? He is actually there. You spoke to him? Before we bring him on, how did he sound?
He sounded good.
Sound okay?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
sounded excited.
I say that because last night, Michael Burton signed a one-year deal with the Denver Broncos, leaving the Chiefs at least momentarily without a fullback, and putting Mike Burton in Sean Payton's offense in the AFC West in Denver. And I just, Ryan, I don't know if you had to come out of a darkness retreat of your own, just trying to kind of get your spirit right to be able to have this conversation, but I really appreciate you making the time. If you're new to Ryan's work, you can follow him on Twitter at RyanTracyNFL. You can check him out on Locked On Chiefs, RGR Football on YouTube, Rogue Analytics, the Athletic Matrix Draft Guide. He does everything ever fathomably possible in the NFL world, does incredible work covering the Chiefs across the board, and is certainly a fullback enthusiast. So, Ryan, sorry for your loss. Thank you for joining us.
It's not that I've come out, Josh. I grabbed my headphones and I brought you into the darkness with me. That's where we're at right now. It is a sad, sad day with no fullback on this roster. Mike's a good guy, has appeared with me many, many times. I'm just left wondering why.
Yeah. I just want you to know that I please don't internalize this. It's not anything that you did, right? I mean, I believe in my heart you did everything in your power to make this a fullback friendly atmosphere and a fullback friendly team. And I just hate to see you have to go through this, man.
I appreciate that. Tony Richardson's going to call me up later. We'll commiserate. We'll be okay.
Do you think he's got a few snaps in him? Because, I mean, I feel like Tony Richardson could probably still do it.
You ain't alone. I'll take three of them today.
Yeah, me too. I'll take 53 Lance Longs and one Tony Richardson. There's a golden era for you. With Michael Burton's untimely exit being said, Ryan, I'm going to try to pull myself together, and I know that you're a professional and you'll power through, but I am really interested. I'm going to admit I have not gotten to see all of your analysis on the two moves the Chiefs have made, the two big splashes so far, so I am genuinely thrilled to know what you think about these two big signings the Chiefs have opened up with here. And we can go, let's go newsworthy. Let's actually start with Charles Omenihu, because I have been very, very intrigued by what I have seen from him over these last, 16 hours or so. What do you think of that addition? 2 years, $16 million, up to 20 with incentives, and a new edge rusher and a pretty versatile looking defensive lineman in the Steve Spagnuolo defense.
It's a wonder that you bring up the versatile word.
Mm-hmm.
It's the new Spag system, right? When you take a look at the measurements, 36 inch arm. So when he came out, he was a guy that I had pegged as a third round pick. Actually went a little bit before that. Was Texas's the Big 12 leader that year in pressures and sacks. He had a reasonable spark to start from. Ends up in Houston. I can't say that his development was really supported there.
Yeah.
But gets to San Francisco and starts to come around late last season. And in 2022, the switch flips. He produced more pressure this last season than Frank Clark did. Was not as much as on the finish percentage and getting all the way home. But very similar season in terms of pressure and number of snaps as Frank had in 2019. So it's a different body type. He's longer, 36-inch arms, great height. He plays at about 275. I think he's listed at 280. Mm-hmm. But he gives more of a girth to the edge there. He can set the edge. He's come around on playing the run. I think he's a guy that, while he's improved quite dramatically in the last 18 months, I think he still has upside to go. So I'm excited about that. I was not aware when the news broke last night, and I did my initial reaction about the off-the-field issue.
Yeah.
So that is a question mark that hangs there. But in terms of what he can do on the field, he's the guy that I think allows you to compare himself, George Karlaftis, Mike Dana, and obviously Chris Jones, who can now literally line up at any spot on the four-man front on any given down, and you don't know who's coming where, who's twisting, who's not, who might drop into a zone. This is the ultimate versatility for Spags to be able to just let Joe Cullen dream up something fun and see what happens.
You just touched on like three or four different things I want to dive in a little bit deeper on. Let's start with stick with the versatility a little bit, because I don't know really, is that an evolution of the sport, or is that something that Steve Spagnuolo has started finding more of? And then we're going to talk about Joe Cullen some, but is that, pre-Joe Cullen, Chris Jones was moving around, right? We saw him on the edge, and two off seasons ago, the big story of Chris Jones playing at defensive end and all that, or I guess one off season ago, you know what I mean. And now we are at this point where everyone you just mentioned there has so many different places where, not just where they can line up, but places they can go after the snap begins. I think it's fascinating. Is that a Chief evolution, or is that an NFL evolution? And then are there other places that you can see that continuing to bear fruit for the Chiefs?
It's a bit of both. If we go back in time to when the staff changed and Brendan Daly came over to Kansas City from New England.
Mm.
We were all talking about the fact he might bring that mush rush that we saw Bill Belichick deploy with him. And we might see guys just not have a classic edge rusher type body anymore, and might be guys that are more workmanlike in producing their pressure, but you just won't know. And it felt like they tried that and didn't quite work. They didn't have the bodies that were as athletically versatile as they wanted. But now I think Spags has come back around full circle on that, and maybe it is the addition of Joe Cullen being able to, what I've been very impressed with, tease more performance out of the talent that they already have. And so now I think it's kind of revisiting that whole concept. So it's new for Spags, I think, but building upon Daly's experience and Cullen's experience and hearkening back to what it looked like a few years ago in the league, and maybe that's going to be the trend around the league, but certainly that's where it's going in Kansas City.
And then when you talk about the coaching elevation for Aminihou going from Houston to San Francisco, and that's something that that Seth Keisler and I actually texted a little bit about last night and going, oh man, you know he was coached up well in San Francisco. When you see a jump like that, does that make you timid about the continued development, because it's hard to recreate, you know, the jump that you get getting into that 49ers defensive line group? Or does it make you excited because you think, oh, well Cullen and Spags are going to have some more to give to Aminihou here, and he's just going to be able to keep building on that?
It's really on my end about the time frame. It's not the fact that you may have tapped out how much he's able to glean. It's that he only did this within less than, I think it's 16 months in San Francisco. So that tells me there was a thirst there, right? There was a large gap in the floor that he was at and ceiling that he can attain. And so I think that that's probably not enough time to have wrangled every last bit out of it. So I see that as a kind of a turbocharge to what can now happen, and you can take in that last 5, 6, 8% to make him a dominant player versus what is a very good player right now.
And this might also be a part of the conversation we can have on the offensive side here in a second too, but I think, just tell me if I'm an idiot. That's always sort of my motive in talking to you, is that if I'm dumb, you tell me and I'll believe you. But I think right now there is a world where the Chiefs could actually just have George Karlaftis and Charles Aminihou on the edges as their starters, with Chris Jones in the middle. Maybe it's Tershawn Wharton, maybe it's somebody else. Obviously Colin Saunders in New Orleans, and no news on Derek Nnadi yet. But at least at the edge, if you're 1-2-3 and Chris Jones is in the middle, if you're 1-2-3 is Karlaftis, Aminihou, Mike Dana, it doesn't feel like that would be a disaster. I don't think it's a top 10 unit in the league, but it would allow the Chiefs, in my mind, to let the draft come to them. And there are several positions where they certainly would want to continue adding talent, both in the short term and in the long term. But yesterday, I didn't know who one of the starting defensive ends would be. And now I feel pretty confident that Aminihou's going to be one of those guys, or if they end up bringing in somebody who takes that job from either him or Karlaftis, that would be a pleasant surprise. Is that the right read on it, or do you think that they still have a really strong need for more depth and maybe even another starter at edge?
I won't say that they have a strong need for a starter. Remember, you can start. That's fine. But I do think what we've seen in the last two seasons in particular, it's not just about the starters. It is about the rotation.
Yeah.
And like we've seen them fill in with vets from Carlos last year back to T-Sizzle, I mean, I think that they need to have a four-man depth chart that they can rotate in, let George do what he does, and when he reduces in particular, have somebody, I hope, with a little bit more speed rush to them that isn't their base end, but is more of like their sub-package NASCAR-specific type edge rusher. Mm. I don't think that precludes them from going in the first round. If they get the right guy that drops, that they feel can do a little bit of both for what they're looking for and be, compared to the running back position, you have your power between the tackle rushers and Amenhu and Karlaftis, and now you want your change of pace rusher, right?
Yep.
If Nolan Smith is there and you want to bring him off the edge and just let him destroy with his first three steps while everybody else is concerned about Chris Jones and Amenhu and Karlaftis, I think that that's a viable concept. Whether that's the plan or not, we'll just have to see.
Where are you at right now in kind of the defense as a whole before we do switch sides? Obviously, I mentioned, you know, the couple of the D linemen. Juan Thornhill, it seems like he's probably going to get paid somewhere else. But I was really impressed by what we saw late in the season and in the playoffs from Brian Cook. I imagine the Chiefs, like you, similar in the depth of all of this, right? The Chiefs are going to want to have three safeties they know they can rely on. But Cook being one of those guys certainly helps. So how do you feel about the defensive unit from a talent perspective right now, with there seemingly being kind of that flexibility to just take the best player at a variety of positions when the draft comes around?
I think it certainly helps. I think, again, what Red Beach is doing what he does best is he's shoring up the biggest needs so that he can then use the draft as either icing on top or a longer-term solution. I don't know that you feel like anything has to be done. I think, honestly, a lot of what we see from Red Beach these days is the answer to the Breland Speaks and McCole Hardman picks, where both of those picks were forced by circumstance. Mm. You had to go get something. So, I like what you said about Cook. I do agree. I still like Brian a little closer to the line of scrimmage than deep. So, if there were a free safety aspect out there that I thought was very good, I would say go that direction. This class doesn't seem to offer it to me. I like the guys that are more robber-type roles and in-the-box type guys. So, I think it's certainly functional with Cook and Reed. But I don't know if that means maybe put a little bit more emphasis and maybe a little bit more budget into bringing Juan back. Maybe it's a shorter-term deal so that for his camp he can get back to another free agency period. We'll see what happens there. But unfortunately, the athleticism of the safety class is not on par with what the Chiefs generally look for. There's a lot of good football players in there. In particular, one guy that I really like is a early day three pick and maybe even a third-round pick in Chris Smith from Georgia. He's a guy that just makes plays, but he doesn't test that well. The production isn't exactly what you would want. It doesn't compare to where they usually go with that position, but it leaves you opportunity and, again, leaves you choices that don't require a top 60 pick.
I before that seemed like the market was really starting to blow up, and knowing that there's a lot of good safeties on the market right now, I thought bringing back Thornhill would have made a ton of sense, especially, like you said, maybe it's a two-year deal that pays him well and he gets to hit free agency again. I would be happy to see that and just keep that trio there. I love the point about all of this being a lesson learned, maybe even from Breland Speaks and McCole Hardman. And again, the Hardman one was not the Chiefs' fault because they didn't know it was going to be happening with Tyreek Hill. Breland Speaks was kind of their fault. And I love being able to see that growth from Brett Veach. It seems like we have seen him continue to kind of take his own successes and failures and then inform what they do next. If we want to shift over to Juwan Taylor, they didn't make a trade to bring somebody in, cost themselves some picks, and then have to spend money on that guy. Even in how they've just been kind of filling out the rest of the roster with those rotational, older, kind of mercenary contract edges, or only giving out the big money deals to younger players. I feel like there has been a legitimate growth from Veach in a variety of areas. I feel like I just took what you said and then put more words into it for no reason and then repeated it back to you to make sure we agreed. Not exactly a question, but is that, I mean, have you seen that growth from Veach over these years across the board like that also?
Yeah, I mean, and certainly I agree with you. And yes, you do put it in a nice, well-tied bow around the package. So well done. Because, you know, I'll get into the weeds. But the other thing that I think it also signifies is that the organization is maturing from top to bottom. I mean, we've seen, obviously, Ryan Poles go. I'm astounded, as much as it, as long as it took Eric Bieniemy to find an opportunity outside of Kansas City, I'm astonished that Mike Borgonzi hasn't found one either.
Yeah.
So the evolution of Trey Kozio going with Poles, with Ryan Nutt moving up, Pat Sperduto in more of a leadership role amongst the scouts, I think it is an organizational maturation as well, not just that of Brett Veach.
Yeah, I think that's a great call. Once again, you said it better in fewer words, and I said it in more words, and that's why we have you on. This is Ryan Tracy. You can follow him on Twitter at Ryan Tracy NFL. Check out Locked On Chiefs podcast, Rogue Analytics, RGR Football on YouTube is an absolute must watch if you're looking to have more visual Chiefs content in your life as well. Again, everything, all the links to all of Ryan's stuff, all on Twitter at Ryan Tracy NFL. So let's flip over to Juwan Taylor. Then I haven't talked to you since the Orlando Brown moves either. Let's take that step back in the time machine when you saw the Chiefs were not franchise tagging Orlando Brown and all of that was kind of up in the air. Where were you at that time before we ever got to Juwan Taylor in particular?
You know, I felt like it was folding a hand that you were still in. I felt like you could have bluffed your way through a few things. I probably would have put the tag on and still pursued Juwan in this case or pursued Orlando. Now, that conversation, we don't know what happened there, and maybe the language and the tone of that phone call just becomes the point where, you know what, we're not even going to bother at this point. We're not going to put that out there, and we're just going to pursue other means. And maybe that's the way it came down. I think in the end, I think it's a really interesting signing, and it is, I think, another case from mirroring a Menahue where player comes in, he has feeling that he can get to. And it took a couple seasons, but then you start to see progression. And now this is another case where you're banking on what you've seen, that progression in the last season, season and a half, to show you upward velocity.
Yeah.
And I think that is a good place to be betting on. That's a good bluff to hold, right? So yeah. I don't know that I'm pushing all in. I don't know that he's that the reports of him slated to play left tackle are everything they appear on the surface. But it's a nice bluff. You're holding queens. You're trying to get the aces out of the hand, and I think that makes sense.
What would be going on the left side then?
I think it's still an opportunity there. I think there's still a smoke that you put up by saying, hey, we're happy to let him play on the left. Mm-hmm. That said, if you can upgrade, if you can get, say, an all-pro in a trade scenario that works for you, you do that. And you leave Taylor on the right where he's grown up and, quite frankly, has played the vast majority of the snaps for the last six seasons. And you upgrade both tackles. Or if you can't do that, then you still certainly consider when that draft board starts to slide and there are guys that fall down into the teams and you think you have a left tackle prospect that you can go get, then maybe you do that as well. Then again, you have premium talent at both tackles. And then the third scenario would be to let Taylor move to left, ride that athleticism and that talent swing, and go invest in a right tackle in case Lucas Niang isn't 100% and isn't ready to go, or, God forbid, is ready to go and then gets hurt again.
Yeah. I really like the idea of, if it's legitimate, I really like the idea of saying, hey, we could put him on either side, and then again, at 31, we're talking about flexibility of what your choices could be. If it's a natural left tackle who's there, you can leave Taylor on the right side. If it's a natural right tackle, you think you can make that switch. But it does sound like you are very much leaving that door open for Laremy Tunsil.
Absolutely. And my only argument is 177.
Is that how many millions of dollars would be in the Chiefs' offensive line, or 177?
No, that's the last time I made the mistake of saying they couldn't get a deal done. That's when they were at $177 in cap space.
Okay, well, so that leads me right into what I wanted to really check with you on, because you also, we understand how the limitations on the finances can work here, and if the Chiefs have, at that point, what I think would be the highest or second highest paid left guard in football, just guard period in football, I think it might have dropped to second now for Tooney, but his individual cap hits these next few years are enormous. Maybe the highest paid right tackle in football and then the highest paid left tackle in football. You've got two rookie contracts in Creed and Trey Smith for now. Eventually, that's going to change as well. But do you, philosophically, how do you feel about the idea of having what would certainly, I have to imagine, be the highest paid O-line in the sport by a pretty decent, I would think, by a pretty decent margin?
Probably, although, again, those rookie contracts have a tendency to pull things dramatically down.
Absolutely.
But my only concern is if you're going to have the highest paid offensive line in the NFL, you have to have the best performing offensive line in the NFL.
Yeah.
And if you're getting performance per dollar, then I'm all for it. And the thing that I will say, too, is that as much as we think we know about how these cap dollars work and where these numbers come in, every time I think I have a handle on it, something gets thrown out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
So I am to the point now where I feel like, whereas Brent Tillis is, certified IRS auditor CPA guy, I'm working on like the 1998 laptop version of TurboTax.
Yes,
I have
absolutely.
No concept.
I'm with you. I've got some sticky notes and some money, some cash on the floor.
There you go. So I'm leaving nothing out of the realm of possibility because I think there are enough ways to manipulate what you have to do in the near term while you wait for the cap to go up, maybe possibly $30 million next season.
Mm-hmm.
It's about treading water until you get to the bigger gaps.
If the left tackle move for Juwan Taylor is legit, if that's what ends up happening, can you put into context for me why that move would work to flip him to the left tackle side and why you think it wouldn't? Like, you're not even necessarily best case, worst case, but just what makes you an optimist, what would make you a pessimist?
The difference is very night and day from what they've seen the last two seasons. Mm. It is about Orlando Brown. As much as they've parted ways, we can't forget the scar that's left.
Yeah.
Because while their reach is about the same, 35-inch range, nothing about the two players is any more similar.
Mm-hmm.
It is a complete separation from lower body to upper body, whereas the strength, the power, and the recoverability within the torso and the trunk of Orlando Brown is epic, but his feet are stuck in holes at times. Mm-hmm. You see that with Speed Rush in Kansas City. Taylor's the opposite. His feet are not only quick, but they're smooth. He's able to readjust, and he shifts his center of gravity extremely well for a man that size. But he doesn't play with the power. He's not driving people off of run blocks. He is there to play to Patrick Mahomes' bread and butter, and that is the drop back and RPO game. It is not what may have been a somewhat attempt to run more power and run more run game. I think what they found is run game efficiency is what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
They're never going to run as much as I want, but if they can get good yardage out of the runs that they use, they'll use the concepts that play into their better pass protectors.
I want to go back. Oh, go ahead. Did I cut you off?
On the opposite side, the only thing that I would get into in terms of concern is being adaptable enough to run the variety of play types that are in this offense. I haven't seen a lot of film on him pulling, getting out into space where I feel like it's as good as I would expect it to be. Maybe that's just a repetition issue, but there's just a couple of little things there. They're far more positives than there are possible negatives.
Talking to Ryan Tracy, RGR Football, Locked On Chiefs, the Athletic Matrix, all of it on Twitter, at Ryan Tracy NFL. A couple of quick hits here. Tershawn Wharton back on the one-year, $2 million deal. Colin Saunders goes to New Orleans and gets a multi-year deal worth a lot more than that. I understand why the Chiefs decided to make sort of that bet on Wharton and to let Saunders walk, but with there being a little bit of space there on the interior of the defensive line, nothing on Derek Nnadi yet. What do you make of the return of Tershawn Wharton?
I like it a lot. I think it was an unplanned, obviously, interruption in his development, and they are banking on that continuing, which I see no reason not to. It's just about can it raise to its level right now, given that don't have Nnadi in-house, don't have Colin. It's thinner ranks overall in terms of the pass rush option. I think that's where the draft can really help them out because there are a number of players that I think are going to be available in the top 100 that can fit into that multifunctional rotation we talked about at the top of the segment. It's about what can you do. Kansas City fan, and I think fan base favorite is Tommy Adewale, who is also undersized but extremely long and extremely quick and can augment some of that. But I do feel like Turk has to be part of their longer plan, maybe even to the point where maybe he does line up as a starter next to Chris Jones, and you get into that rotation a little bit earlier because he doesn't have as much girth as say, Saunders did. I think Saunders is going to be in for a nice career in New Orleans, and I think the Chiefs will end up saying, hey, you know, if we could have kept him, that would have been great.
Yeah. That also just like the absolute unanimous, like, happy for Colin Saunders, man. Get that bag. Has just been fun to see. I bet you're absolutely right. The Chiefs would have been happy to have him back, but we're pinching pennies out here. Do you have any hesitation on extending Chris Jones at this point if the reports of him wanting to be just the second highest paid defensive tackle, highest paid non-Aaron Donald DT, are you just waiting to push the button on that where the Chiefs could free up some money? Do you want to wait that out? What's your Chris Jones heat check at this point, since we haven't really had any updates there in a while and the cap space is starting to move? For this year, I mean, because you could obviously create more space by extending Chris Jones now.
Right. Heat check is I'm standing on the coals and I'm ready to stay here. Let's get this done. It doesn't matter to me. Structure will take care of what I need.
Good. Okay. I'm with you on that one. And then what do you think about the wide receiver market right now? I thought if Jakobi Meyers really was like the number one receiver on the market, that was not a number one receiver contract. I wonder what that means for Juju. I don't know how you feel about an Adam Thielen or Robert Woods or any of the other guys who have hit the market here lately.
I feel honestly like the whole wide receiver market is a direct backlash against last year's crazy signing.
Yeah.
Not just for Christian Kirk, but obviously Devontae, his contract was what made Tyreek leave town, right?
Right.
So like it was so out of the ordinary. I feel like this is not just a return to quote-unquote normality, but even maybe a little bit of a backlash there. Hmm. I think that's a negative for Juju. Mm-hmm. I think it's a positive for Juju's return. I like the concept of Juju over, say, a Thielen because of age. You can't deny Adam Thielen's skills, but you can deny that you can't see any progression from that, and you have to expect some regression at his age. The wild card for me is Odell Beckham.
Yeah.
I am just very hesitant in a number of ways, but if it proves out to be legitimate, I think you can see in limited usage in a snap volume like you saw for Juju that there could be a fit there. And then I think it is about moving on to the next generation and getting Kadarius more involved and getting Sky more involved. And then I think you can go look at bigger-bodied, certainly Z-type and possibly X-type receivers in this draft.
I would love that last part, certainly. And so if I offered you something like, if you want to tweak the numbers, that's fine, but something like 3 years, $30 million, like 18 guaranteed or something like that for Juju, is that something you'd be down for? Is that a price too high?
You know, it's pushing it, but I think that's probably the market for a guy who is a contributor to that point. Mm-hmm. You need more in terms of total production at that cost. So I would think that maybe a slightly smaller total number there with continued incentive, like he just hit. I think that would be probably something that's appealing to both sides.
I love it. I hope that's how it pans out. Hey, look, I've tried to promote and accurately name all your stuff, but I also like to just let you do it so you can point people towards the things that are coming out now, something coming out tomorrow, something from last night, whatever. Where can people find more of your work if they've just fallen in love with you over the past half hour?
Well, if they have, then I'm sorry. The voodoo worked. But it's Ryan Tracy NFL on Twitter. And all those outlets are absolutely true. Daily on Locked On Chiefs. RJR Football is daily as well. The newest thing is NFL 33, which
yes.
is draft specific.
I'm sorry, I forgot to mention NFL 33. Promote it, Ryan. I'm getting out of the way.
No worries. It's where we put everything. It's not necessarily Chiefs specific, but it does cover the draft and free agency and team building from a much wider perspective and how everything outside of Kansas City plays into what happens in Kansas City. So you can check that out as well.
You gotta put that in your Twitter bio and maybe even in the cover photo, because that is admittedly absolutely the thing that I use to check myself every time, and I completely skipped over NFL 33. So you can check that out as well. And again, if you follow Ryan on Twitter, you'll see the links as it all pops up at Ryan Tracy NFL. Ryan, I really appreciate you making the time for us today. I hope that if your voodoo worked to cast a spell on everyone with an earshot here in Kansas City, that you're also working on some voodoo to get a fullback back in Kansas City. And we'll catch up again soon, my friend.
We definitely will. Enjoy the big chair, my dude.
It's been good so far. We've had a lot to talk about this week. It's kept us nice and busy, but never better than talking to Ryan Tracy. Again, at Ryan Tracy NFL on Twitter. I am just an absolute full endorser of this dude's work. I think you will absolutely love it, as this last half hour or so hopefully illustrated for you. A great, great resource for all the Chiefs fans within the sound of our voice right now. Big fan of Ryan. We will take a break. Hope you've been a big fan of today's edition of The Zone. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Jason Anderson out on vacation in the land of milk and honey and mouse ears. Disney. Beards McFly on the other side of the glass. We've had a lot going on today. I think there's still meat on the bone of some of these conversations we've barely gotten into. But that's it, baby. This is March, as they say, which is, you know, not just the madness of the bracketology, but also the madness of Aaron Rodgers trying to find the new home, and the madness of the Chiefs continuing to make moves as the NFL league year is technically here now, I guess. But I mean, it's all been rolling for a while. And we will continue rolling on for a little while more here on the other side of this break. Listening to The Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in The Zone.
I'm doing something I've never done before. I'm Googling handsome NFL quarterbacks.
With Jason Anderson.
I'm still trying to find a site that has Alex Smith on one of these. I'll do some more research and come back to you. You talk about football.
Please.
You talk about actual football.
Please come back to me with more research.
For sure.
Is this the best show you've ever done?
Private browser?
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Hey, Beards!
Yes?
I got some breaking news for you! Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest, and basically, I think he's on 810 more often than I am at this point. 8 days a week, you can hear Matt Derrick on this show, including Friday, he'll join us in studio. Matt Derrick tweets, the Chiefs have tendered an offer for quarterback Shane Buechele, per source. Do you want to hit the bookend of the breaking news thing?
Thank you. I don't know if you were going to more of that or not.
I was, but I thought we could hit the little bookend thingy again. Or you could do it again after I finish Matt Derrick's tweet, which continues. Buechele is an exclusive rights free agent, but he will return as expected to Kansas City. And right now is number two on the depth chart behind Patrick Mahomes. I admittedly have the door open in here because it's really nice out. I'm just trying to enjoy a beautiful spring day. Because it's been wonderful. Little breeze in the studio. It's really nice. Standing energy for huge chunks of the show today, by the way.
Yeah, no joke.
Been on my feet a lot. Feels nice. A lot of sirens out there. Might need to close the door momentarily. Beards, I'd like your NBA playoff preview, please. Go.
Well, I mean, we still got a bunch of time before the playoffs.
Yeah, we're listen, check in.
The Suns stink.
Hey.
My Celtics are having issues. They lost to the freaking Rockets the other day. Oof. That's not ideal. Let's see. The Nuggets are in free fall. The Sacramento Kings are the 2 seed.
Light the beam, baby.
And they're going to, like, they're the only stable team in the league, it seems like. There you go.
Here's a crazy stat. With Aaron Rodgers going to the New York Jets, Dak Prescott is now the NFL's longest tenured starting quarterback. It's from John Machota on Twitter, covering the Cowboys for The Athletic. He's been the Cowboys starter since 2016.
Is that his first full season, or is that when he took over from Tony Romo?
Good question. Not completely sure.
Let me look.
But Dak, in terms of recent NFL history, and you can, you know, our liner was Alex Smith based, and we haven't been doing radio for all that many years. It's been a while now. But the longest tenured starting quarterback in the NFL is Dak Prescott. For you know, One individual team, obviously.
So I think
Brady
that,
broke that, and
so
Rodgers now.
I think that year, that 2016 year, was when I think Romo was hurt going into the year, and Dak started.
Yeah, I couldn't remember exactly what the cutoff was. Also a question
I
asked on
Twitter.
I thought
it was like midway through the season or something, but no, it was that first full year was 2016.
I had earlier, I thought, I'm kind of hungry. I saw somebody tweet delicious food picture of some sort. I thought, I'm kind of hungry. I didn't have breakfast. And then I realized I did have breakfast. I got a breakfast burrito from Sonic. That was like 30 minutes ago. And I got that breakfast burrito at like 9 or something. So trying to keep up the quarterback timeline of the 2016 Dallas Cowboys is just not something I think I'm going to be doing very effectively. So thank you, Beards, for checking it. Here's a question for you from Twitter. Who's the second best quarterback in the NFC right now?
Who's the best?
I wonder if the implication there is Jalen Hurts. But Dak, probably. Daniel Jones is getting paid like it. The two best quarterbacks in the NFC right now might both be in the NFC East, and one of them the team wasn't really committed to that strongly before this most recent season, and the other one, I don't know that Jerry Jones loves even now. Is it Kirk Cousins?
Is it Derek Carr?
It could be Derek Carr.
Is it Geno?
Is it Geno?
Is it Jared Goff?
No. Maybe. No. Are you just scrolling through like team logos right now? What are we looking at?
I'm literally just looking at like ESPN standings from last year to look at all the NFC teams and trying to remember who all their quarterbacks are.
Yeah.
Because it's dark over there.
I know. It's crazy. It is a really shocking thought experiment. Meanwhile, you keep scrolling through the NFC and you can just shout names to me. While let me see how many. Let's play this game, Beards. Let's play a game.
Justin Fields?
Here's the game. I'm giving him a maybe, we'll see.
Baker Mayfield?
That's my answer. You know what? Hot take. Best two quarterbacks in the NFC were both Eagles last year. Gardner Minshew, baby. How many AFC quarterbacks would you take over? We can make it every NFC quarterback except for Jalen Hurts if you want. A bunch of these guys are going to take over Jalen Hurts anyway. I'm going to go with the no-brainers right now.
Okay.
Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson. I'm doing this by division, everybody, not by order. Don't yell at me all at once. Josh Allen for sure, Joe Burrow for sure, Lamar Jackson for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The Browns paid up for Deshaun Watson like you'd like to have him.
Last year was not a great on the field.
No,
presence,
but it's
he
been
has had a track record of being good on the field
when he's been there. Yeah, Trevor Lawrence.
If we're talking specifically football and not massages.
I'm not even counting Deshaun Watson right now because I'm not at a place where I can evaluate him fairly at this point. I don't think Trevor Lawrence, Patrick Mahomes.
He's on our exempt list.
I like that. Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert. Jimmy Garoppolo? That's like six or seven AFC quarterbacks who would be absolutely top two in the NFC, and most of those guys would be number one. That's not including Tua.
I wouldn't put Jimmy up there, but
I wouldn't either.
Okay.
That's not including Tua, who might belong there. It's not including Aaron Rodgers, who was probably the second best quarterback in the NFC before he got traded just now. He has not officially been traded. He's just emerged from the darkness.
He wants to be traded.
It's been... Can we start calling him Punxsutawney Phil? Like he comes out of the darkness, says how many more weeks of winter there are, and then goes back again. And that's not including a bunch of these AFC teams who are going to draft quarterbacks. Now, obviously, the Panthers and the NFC are looking like they're going to, but it is a really strange quarterback market. The Colts most likely will draft somebody, but it's kind of hard to project at a certain level now because there are so many unknowns. There are probably you could see there being four straight quarterbacks, bang, 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 right at the top of the draft, which would be good for everyone who's not taking a quarterback. But I don't know that I feel that confident that these teams are going to get the guy they want. The Colts sit at 4 right now. The Texans will draft one at 2. That's another AFC quarterback. The Cardinals won't. We didn't mention Kyler Murray. It might legit be Kyler Murray when he's healthy.
Oof.
I know. I have a hope for Kyler Murray that he will probably never achieve in Arizona.
The other thing about all these NFC teams and their quarterbacks,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them are like kind of already entrenched and set in.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, yeah, man, we got Jared Goff. We'd like somebody better, but, you know, we're kind of okay for now.
And I would love for the Lions to end up with Anthony Richardson, because you could have another year of Goff. You could have Anthony Richardson sit for a year, or if at some point you want to go ahead and put him out there partway through the season, or however it plays out, I think that'd be great.
Or it's like, yeah, we got Matt Stafford, and we're maybe trying to trade him.
Nothing you can do about Matt Stafford right now. There are four.
We think Justin Fields is going to be good, but we're not sure. We're going to stick around and find out.
It is a really fascinating time in the NFL. I don't know if there's a rhyme or reason as to why the AFC seems to have all those guys. I don't know if the AFC West started an arms race, like if Mahomes just lit everything off.
Was the NFC just a bunch of like older established guys that have just phased out?
Probably. I mean, I think that's reasonable.
Russell Wilson was over there. Drew Brees was over there.
He got traded before we knew what was about to happen to him, too, though.
Matt Ryan
goes NFC to AFC and kind of disappears into a puff of smoke. Ooh, the Tankathon NFL mock draft has Will Levis dropping all the way to 7 to the Raiders. Anyway, it is just a fascinating set of moving pieces in the NFL right now. And I know it's crazy that we've spent the vast majority of our breath today on football things. The Chiefs continue to make moves, Charles Omenihu being the latest addition. I'm excited about what he can do on the edge. To see where that evolution kind of continues for this front four. There's no longer a desperation jump that needs to be made. I thought Ryan Tracy's point last segment about that being a lesson learned by Brett Veach of Breland Speaks and of Mecole Hardman. And Hardman was not, I don't put those guys in the same breath because they were the same level of ungood. But in terms of, hey, we don't want to be in a spot where we're on our heels being forced to draft a position or with Speaks. Remember with Breland Speaks, they traded up. Because he was the last guy, Veach said this, and I'm paraphrasing, but he was the last guy that they kind of viewed as being...
Never on the ground?
In the tier of defensive ends that were still there at that point, but Beards' was funnier because it's always funny. Breland Speaks is never on the ground. We never take a break on time. Welcome to the zone, everybody.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
I've probably upset somebody, right?
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
A little bit more of The Zone here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Joshua Briscoe and Beards McFly with you. Jason Anderson out for a little while. Out for another like week or so. You're stuck with me and Beards flying the ship. Program coming up in a little bit. And then tonight, Nevada versus Arizona State right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. That starts at 8 following the Sporting Kansas City show at 7, which follows Crunch Time at 6. So a full slate of sports goodness coming to you live here on your home for March Madness, Sports Radio 810 WHB. And all of our March Madness coverage is brought to you by Xfinity, Blue Chew, CBD American Shaman, First Federal Bank, JPA Roofing, and Barstool Sportsbook inside Hollywood Casino. Plus, you still have time to go fill out your bracket right now at 810WHB.com. Enter the bracket challenge. Compete against me. Compete against Beards. Compete against Jason. Compete against your friends and family and coworkers and colleagues. Sign up there, win some great prizes, a grill from Smoke and Fire, Hy-Vee gift cards. That's all brought to you by Twin Peaks, Robert Rogden Buick GMC, and Olathe Kia, Smoke and Fire, and Hy-Vee. I was going to decide if I like had a strong take. You know what? Arizona State by a billion. What's the line? I don't know. I don't care. But tomorrow, if you're free around this same time, I'd highly suggest you come see us at Atomic Cowboy Sports Saloon downtown. You can come through. We'll be live from 10 to 11:30. That's when the KU coverage begins right here on your home for the Jayhawks. We're going to be hanging out until at least 2 out there enjoying the madness. So come see us tomorrow morning. In the meantime, enjoy the program coming up next. Bye, Mom.